The Pain Pod's presented by Trumeau Pharmaceuticals and is intended for educational and informational purposes only. Please speak to medical professionals before making any treatment decisions and visit TrumeauRx.com to learn more about their work.
There's no such thing as real or unreal pain.
Pain doesn't know gender or culture or anything, right? It afflicts us all.
Because it affects so many people in often profound ways.
You know, you do a lot of thinking when you're in pain. I think it gives you a certain perspective on life.
Definitely did not want to accept it, and I also didn't believe that that was really the plan for my life.
I always get through it, though, always.
All in all, in the United States, we're doped up. To give you a statistic of how just the crisis that we're in with pain medication, specifically opioids, we make up a little less than 5% of the world's population, and we consume over 80% of the world's opioids. Crazy. It just doesn't make sense. Like even like hydrocodone, we consume 99% of the global hydrocodone supply. In the US, 2/3 of the world's illegal drugs. So like not only are we consuming like prescription medications, but because of just our lifestyle and what these prescription meds lead to, we also then consume 2/3 of the world's illegal drugs.
Hi, this is Patrick. Welcome back to the Pain Pod. In our previous episode, chiropractor Dr. Ben Ozan shared some sobering data on opioid and drug consumption in the United States. In this episode, we explore some of the reasons we're in a drug epidemic, and we'll hear directly from people impacted by it. Survivors of siblings lost to overdoses. We pick up with Dr. Ozan sharing his view on the role of medicine.
I think medicine, particularly Western medicine, is great at emergencies. So you get in a car accident, or you know, you break a limb, or your blood pressure shoots up to 200 over, you know, 120. And you're in that crisis scenario, thank God we have some amazing medicines that have been invented that can help us get out of that acute state. So then we can get in the right frame of mind to actually fix the problem. And that's where I view medicine as a great tool. If we can get someone from that acute inflammatory state where they're just, their mind's only focused on that, and then help shift it to where they're in a more relaxed, what we call parasympathetic state, that's where then people can actually start to proactively think through and rationally think through, okay, how can I fix this issue?
Listen, medical is amazing at emergency care and getting us to survive some pretty traumatic things, right? The problem is that we can't jump into our health care until we're sick, which is a sick care system, not a health care system. Hi, my name is Dr. Tanya Reynolds. I'm a chiropractor, and I'm actually from Florida, Fort Myers, Florida, down south. Love emergency care. Love it. We can save a life, no matter what. But making everything into a medical procedure is where I feel like they get it wrong. Through birth, through health, through nutrition, through, you know, pain. Everything is putting into a medical model. Not everything is a medical procedure.
If it's an acute issue, all right, what do I need to do? Okay, I have a broken bone. Let's get to the emergency room. Let's get it set and get in a cast. But if it's a chronic issue, that's where I think medicine and medications have failed us, because it's become a long-term solution versus a temporary fix or a band-aid.
We want instant gratification. We want instant relief. We don't have time to take care of our bodies. When we have a fever, when we have a sickness, we want to take a pill, we want it to go away, right? We don't want to really listen to our body.
A band-aid is there to help kind of protect the area initially, but eventually you want that band-aid off so you get all the oxygen and the blood and the healing to take place. The longer you leave the band-aid on, actually the slower your healing will take place. So the quicker you can get the band-aid off, the quicker that wound will actually heal.
A It's all about production, but it's also about getting out of pain and not taking care of your body. So when we get in a point where we're in chronic pain, anything over 6 months of pain that you haven't taken care of is gonna more likely to turn into long-term chronic pain, right? We know that. So when we have that, we want a pill to make ourselves feel better. The problem is that they're highly addictive. They're highly addictive and they've known it all along, but it's easier to get people addicted to something than it is to get them to move their body and get them healing themselves again. Yeah.
A lot of first world countries fall into this trap where it's just kind of that quick fix. We want to feel good now. We've gotten used to, you know, in our society kind of having whatever we want. We have the money to do so. And so it's like, all right, I want to go out and get a car. I'm going to go get a loan. I want to enjoy my pleasures now. And I don't care what that's going to mean for me tomorrow. And that's gotten us into this sick cycle because, hey, a medication is great. I can numb your pain. Here, take this and you're not going to feel anything and you're going to be able to go on with your day. And I get it.
Remember, sympathetic is fight or flight. We're surviving. We're in survival mode. When you're running from a lion, it's just basically your breath and your brain. Where am I going to go? Right? When you're in parasympathetic, when we're resting, we can actually digest. We can heal. We can be creative.
Even in the crisis that we're in now, many people can't put food on their tables, can't pay their mortgages because they don't have that savings, that stockpile. Because all we're about is living for the here and now. So it's not just when it comes to our money, but it's when it comes to our health. So we'll spend all of our health to get a little wealth. And then when we're old, we'll spend all of our wealth trying to get back a little bit of health.
We don't slow down enough. Let's put it that way. We're stuck in sympathetic drive, right? There's a Starbucks on every single corner because we have to have that sympathetic drive because we're taught we need to be working 24/7.
We're even seeing with what's going on now, hospitals and doctors have what they call best practices. Our healthcare system has been set up so much that it's like, all right, doctor, you have to remove yourself. And here's the protocol. This person has lower back pain. Here's what you do, no matter their presentation, no matter their history. And if that doesn't work, then we go to the drastic measure of surgery. And it sets people up, many people up for failure because the doctor's no longer being the doctor. They're just being a robot and following a protocol. Hospitals especially will push doctors based off of their performance and their numbers. They have to hit a certain number in order to get their bonus, in order to stay even on the staff and on the team, which really makes it difficult to actually be a doctor. They're trying to spend less time with a patient, up their volume, and create more income. They're set up for production versus individualistic care. The majority of us, we've been given a capability to get healthy. But I think Western medicine has stunted our ability to do so because we've become so reliant upon that quick fix, let me feel good now. We've overused medications to the point that it's actually stunted our ability to heal, and it's become a long-term solution when it was really only intended to be a short-term acute emergency type medication situation.
We'll hear from people intimately impacted by the drug crisis in just a moment after this quick word from our sponsor. The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and made possible thanks to our sponsor, Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Tremo was founded with the goal of developing and delivering non-opioid therapies for people with rare diseases and other select patient conditions. Tremo is currently investigating two COX-2 selective NSAIDs, NSAID for those who aren't familiar, stands for non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs. While neither of these treatments are FDA approved, they are in clinical trials, and you can learn more about those trials, Tremo's mission, and the dedicated team leading it by going to TremoRx.com. That's TremeaUrx. Tremo, leading the way for those left behind in pain.
Hi, my name is Laura Turner. I'm from Bishop, California, and I am the sister of an addict, Eugene.
Growing up, my brother was always a little bit of a troublemaker. He was kind of like a Bart Simpson in his youth. And then as he got a little bit older, that turned into drug use and stuff like that. Hi, my name is Alyssa Klein. I'm a writer and social media strategist based in New York City, and I am the sister of someone that we lost to what we presume is an accidental drug overdose 4 weeks ago.
He was adventurous. He was down to do anything. He was kind. He was very kind. He'd give you the shirt off his back if you needed it more than him, or just if you needed it, his last dollar. He was special. He was really special. My son loves playing like war and dressing up in his camo and playing with his Nerf guns. And he would be able to get his uncle and convince him to do pretty much anything. He would get him to try on costumes and be like, let's go play. And I'd look out the window and they're rolling around in the dirt and just having the time of their lives. He was just that person. Like my daughter, she's really girly and wanting to play with things. And so he would just sit there and he would play dolls with her. He would do whatever she wanted. Like they'd be like, here, uncle, do this. And he wouldn't second guess it. He'd be like, okay, let's do this. He'd put on whatever. And he just wanted to make them happy. And that's what he did. He was an amazing uncle. He really was. I couldn't have asked for a better uncle to my kids.
So David had been doing really well. He was a month away from being sober for an entire year. I saw him in November and he was so happy and he just looked so great and was killing it. And he was working as a personal trainer at a gym. He had texted my dad and I that he was about to be promoted and was so excited. His daughter didn't live with him at the time, but he was visiting her and texting us pictures of her almost every day. He really had it together and we were all really proud of him. And then, of course, the promotion never happened because of the pandemic. And so he went from just about to be promoted to suddenly he had no work. And he also had to stop visiting his daughter because of the stay-at-home orders. So in the span of a week, he suddenly had nothing to do with his days. His pride and joy in his life was, he just didn't know when the next time he was going to see her would be. And then I don't know for sure, but I imagine that David was going to tons of meetings and things that were constantly part of his life, and that had to stop as well.
I was actually the one that found my brother. So, I mean, when I found him, truthfully, I guess you can say I like blacked out because I don't really remember much after finding him. My kids were next door and I went and found my brother and I just went into a daze or something. And next thing you know, I snapped out of it and I was surrounded by my cousins and my family and everybody. And I was just whoa, how did you guys all get here? How did the word spread so fast? But I mean, it probably was 4 hours went by and then I oh my God, this really happened. And then I went and talked to my son and told him, and seeing his world shatter just made it harder for me, but I try to be tough for him, and explain to him, we all make choices in life and I don't think your uncle meant to do it, but it happened.
I got the message from this man on Facebook saying who is my brother's landlord, and to please give him a call. And so the thought crossed my mind, like, oh my gosh, what happened to David? And an hour before this, I had been calling my dad every day just to catch up during the pandemic. And we were talking about my brother, and my dad said, you know, I'm worried about David. One, he's no longer working now. And two, he can't see his daughter. And he hasn't been answering my calls. So I passed the man's number to my dad, thinking if it was rent or money related, I'd rather our dad talk to him. So 5 minutes went by, and my face like got white, and I was just like not focusing at all. I was waiting for my dad to call to confirm that he was okay. And so then my dad called, and my dad's a pretty strong guy. Like, he doesn't really show a lot of emotion. I knew as soon as he said a word that something bad happened. And he just said, all right, David passed away. And so we didn't really say a lot to each other. He just said, David passed away. I think that he overdosed. And then, yeah, I mean, I'm never gonna forget that interaction. And it's, if anything, it kind of haunts me when I think about it. I can like feel that feeling of my dad saying those words. And I feel it in like the pit of my stomach.
For a good couple weeks, I hid my feelings from my son. Like, I never saw, let him see me crying. I never let him know what I was going through. And like I said, when I went to these groups, and I was like, oh my God, like, this isn't good for him. Like, he needs to see that I'm hurting. He needs to see my emotions. We would talk. We'd have our quiet time, and me and him would just talk, and I'd ask him how he's feeling. And I told him, you know, it's okay to be mad and angry. I said, because there's days I'm mad and I'm angry for what happened. And then there's days where I'm happy for the times that I did get to spend with him, all the memories that he did leave me with. And I tell him, you know, it's okay to be sad, you know, and me, as a mom, I think about everything that my son's going to go through, and my brother won't be there to help either teach me how to guide him as a little boy, you know, through life or whatever. And so I check in with my son, and I'm just like, how are you feeling? Are you mad? Are you sad? Are you happy today? I said, do you want to talk about it, uncle? Do you want to bring out pictures? Do you want to, whatever he wants to do is what we'll do to keep him busy, keep his mind off things. One thing I expressed to him is, just as a child when I was growing up, my outlet from life, I guess, was picking up a basketball and playing basketball. And so I've told him, you know, if you have an outlet, if you have something you want to draw, I mean, let's pick up a pencil and start drawing every day. If you need to just go and shoot a basketball, go shoot a basketball. If you need to go and hit baseballs, let's go hit baseballs. Whatever your outlet is, let's focus on that too. Just because I know if I didn't have basketball, that kept me in escaping reality. Who knows? Maybe I would have went down the same path my brother did. The funny thing is, I actually was never exposed to David using drugs. I mean, I was definitely around him when he was using drugs. It's just like, I had no idea. But it wasn't the kind of thing he would openly engage with when I was around. My brother had such a big heart and was such a kind, incredible man. I don't really associate him being on drugs with him like tapping into a dark side. I think it was him tapping into his less than smart impulses. I would call it his like really stupid side. Like, he had so much potential, and the drugs were the opposite. It was like the opposite of potential.
remember that we're emotional, physical, and spiritual bodies. And without every single one of those pieces, we're not actually able to be who we really are. And if we're disconnected through pain, through other things, through spiritual disconnection, through emotional disconnection, we're not able to live our purpose here. And as souls, that starts to get really uncomfortable and really, really challenging to live to your fullest potential.
It was funny, my dad pulled up his like high school baseball card or something, and it asked what you want to be when you grow up, and he said he wants to be like in like business or something like that. He never had the opportunity to do that, but I think he would have been incredible as a business person.
It's clear that we have a problem. Dr. Ben Ozan sums it up pretty well.
The majority of us, we've been given a capability to get healthy, but I think Western medicine has stunted our ability to do so because we become so reliant upon that quick fix, let me feel good now. And what it's showing, there was a John Hopkins research study that they did, and they found that medical errors are now the third leading cause of death in the United States. And what they found is what's called iatrogenic death is actually the leading cause of death in the United States, kills over 800,000 people every year. Iatrogenic death is death by medicine. So while John Hopkins released that study of medical errors, this book, Death by Medicine, compiled not just medical errors, but hey, we gave you this medication. It was the right medication for your diagnosis, given in the right amount, and it still caused you to die. Or you had the right surgery for the right reason, and it still caused you to die. So not just errors, which happen all the time in hospitals. I mean, we were supposed to amputate your right leg and we accidentally did your left. Yes, or hey, we did a surgery and we accidentally left a gauze in your body that caused you to go septic and die. Like, those are things that happen daily. But also the things like, hey, the surgery went right. There was no complications and yet you still died from it. And it was the surgery that caused it. Or the medication that you took, well, you were just one of those lucky few that the medication had that side effect and caused you to die early. All of those things. So honestly, while Western medicine over the years has gotten a lot of respect, I think it's about time that people realize that it is not this long-term solution that it's been touted to be. And we gotta go a different direction, because there's a better way to take care of our health than just drugs and surgery. And it's been proven, like we're seeing that. The United States has been a test ground for the medical system, and it's failed us.
On the next episode of The Pain Pod.
I feel like even with the Hispanic community, they don't want to reach out too often. And I have a lot of friends within the Hispanic community, and I reach out to them, or I tell them, you know, all the time, talk to me if you need help, or if your brother's going through something or your sister's going through something, let me know, and I'm here to help them. If they're embarrassed, like, I'll go with them. You know, the same thing I told my brother, let's figure this out. Let's help them.
We explore the role culture, faith, race, family, and gender play in addressing pain. Next time on episode 5 of The Pain Pod. The Pain Pod is written and directed by me, Patrick James Lynch, produced and edited by Greg Holdsman, artwork by Ryan Gielen and Christina Newhard, post-production support from Joshua Sterling Bragg, Rob Bradford, and Avra Friedman, and this episode was hosted by me, Patrick James Lynch. The Pain Pod is produced by Bloodstream Media and presented by Tremo Pharmaceuticals. Learn more about Tremo and the work they're doing to help alleviate pain by visiting TREMEAURX.com. Subscribe, rate, and share The Pain Podcast. Referrals from you are the best way we can reach new people. Thanks for listening. My name is Patrick James Lynch. We'll be back next week with episode 5 of The Pain Pod.